again to Chris Campbell and Sheila Klinker for being here with us tonight. Very much appreciate your support of our schools. Thank you. All right, so we're going to go ahead and move on. The next is communication from the audience on agenda items, which we do not have anyone noted for that. And then we'll move on to new business. So item three, new school board policy, Dr. Greiner.
Thank you. We have three types of policies that we'll talk about this evening. Two of them, the board will be asked to vote to approve. And then the other one is one of two readings, and it is the first reading because it is a new policy. So that's the one I will begin with, and that's that first reading that is information or verbal only. And that is 8305, information security. And this policy's been recommended by NEOLA earlier, but we are recommending adoption of this policy for the first time tonight. And so it will, as I said, require two readings. The policy ensures measures such as user agreement, cybersecurity training, and data information protection. And it's particularly important today given the challenges of cybersecurity and so forth. The cyber challenges that we've had recently.
Okay, so this one is just information, correct?
That's correct.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. I do want to take this opportunity. Our central office has prepared this policy guide, and on the back are details to help keep it straight. There's a lot of policies we're working through. So if you're interested in the detail, this orange or salmon color paper is the one of interest. And that will be posted with the board documents on the website after the meeting. So are there any questions for Dr. Greiner on item three with the policy about information security? All right, we'll move on to item four, the second reading of two on policies, and Dr. Greiner.
So these are the two policies that are also new, but we had them as a first reading last month, and it's policy 164.5, member participation in meetings through electronic means of communication. It states that a board member may attend two consecutive meetings via online avenue, and they can attend online no more than 50% of the time, and they must be, if there's two consecutive, then there must be an in-person meeting in between. There are some exceptions as spelled out in the policy, as you're aware. The second policy, which is in second reading, is 164.6, and is that's related to meetings during disaster emergencies. When the governor declares disaster, the board may hold meetings online, and the rules related to a quorum still apply. This is the second reading for these two new policies, and it is my recommendation the board move to approve these two policies.
Okay, can I get a motion, please? Moved by Mr. Karpik, second. Second by Mr. Schott. So this is an opportunity for questions or discussion. Anyone? Okay, hearing none, all those in favor of the new school board policies, the second reading, please indicate aye. That's 7-0. And that motion passes. The next item, item five, school board policy revisions. These are the first reading and only reading. Dr. Greiner.
In these policies, there's quite a few in here. As you know, we've been focusing on revision of policies. We are somewhat behind given the transition from one superintendent to another superintendent. So that's why you continue to get new policies as you vote to approve revisions. These revisions are either due to technical changes or changes to Indiana code requiring some revision to ensure that we are aligned to Indiana code in our decision making. There's 14 policies here. Some of these are kind of connected, and so I will kind of describe what you're voting to approve here, though you've reviewed those, but for the spirit of transparency, I'd like to go ahead and share that anyway. So for policy 167.3, public participation at board meetings, this policy deals with the revisions related to members of the public having the right to speak as part of an agenda item or as speaking to the agenda or as a part of the agenda. And so as the board is aware, this is something where this board has been going above and beyond, and you have allowed that. But now that is a requirement, and there are some districts that weren't allowing that. And so our policy now reflects that that is something, even though you were already doing, that you must do. Policy 1220 and policy 1520 are related to employment of the superintendent and or employment of administrators in addition to the superintendent. These policies are revised pursuant to Senate Act 55, Senate Enrollment Act 55, and it basically states that the corporation is prohibited to issue bonuses to administrators as a result of favorable outcomes of a referendum. There's three policies that I've also put together: policy 3120.08, policy 4120.08, and policy 5340.01, which is a little different than the first two. The first two are focusing on employment of personnel for extracurricular activities. And these policies are related to concussions and sudden cardiac arrest. The changes are in policy 5340.01 is the student concussion and sudden cardiac arrest policy. The revision is that marching band leaders and sponsors are now required to take training related to concussions and cardiac arrest. And the policy 5340.01, it now includes marching band students as students that are a part of that group of increased risk. And so for that reason, they will receive and provide acknowledgement of receipt of such information before participating, similar to what athletes, football players, and so forth are required to do. Policy 3120.11 focuses on public hearing before commencement of collective bargaining and public meeting for ratification of tentative agreement. The board has already been complying to this because it's a requirement within Indiana code, but we now are up to policy and it is aligned to that Indiana code. Basically, a public meeting must be scheduled and conducted to discuss the tentative agreement and allow public comment at least 72 hours before the board will vote. And then the agreement must be posted on the website within 14 days of approval. Policy 5540, the Schools and Governmental Agencies House Enrollment Act 1531 defines exigent circumstances and includes circumstances that DCS may be granted permission to interview a student alone on campus. Policy 6105, authorization to accept and distribute electronic records and to use electronic signature. That's just a technical correction, and they're simply adding statutory citation to support why that policy is in place. Nothing else has changed in that policy. Policy 6230, budget hearing. There's a revision there to state that if a referendum levy is included in the proposed budget, then a spending plan must be included as well. Policy 7450, property inventory. The corporation must maintain an inventory of items over $5,000. That is a change from originally stated items over $10,000. Policy 7540.03 and 7540.04, I've combined those in to explain as well, provide explanation. Student technology acceptable, user safety, staff technology acceptable use and safety. The change in language states requirements prohibiting the sending, receiving, viewing, or downloading of materials harmful to minors. And those are the changes to these policies. With that, it is my recommendation that the board vote to approve these policy revisions.
Okay, can I get a motion, please?
So moved.
Moved by Dr. Springer.
Second.
Second by Mrs. Austin. What questions do we have for Dr. Greiner?
ask one question?
Yeah.
So for the budget hearing, and I wonder usually when is that meeting? So typically how?
For collective bargaining?
For the budget, the 6230?
Budget hearing.
Budget hearing. Okay, so Steve, would you like to respond to the when the budget hearing?
That would be in September.
After you presented?
After there's, we have the budget workshop, and the next month is the budget hearing.
Okay.
So September.
It will be with a regular board meeting, or it will be a special?
It's with the regular board meeting.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome.
Any other questions? Comments?
I just want to acknowledge Dr. Springer for many years. She's coordinated all this. This is a lot of extra work, and we'd be lost without you. So you are the policy queen.
She really is. She keeps us in line and keeps us focused.
Keeps it moving. That's right. That's right. I will vouch for that, having served on that committee myself for a number of years. She is, yes, I agree. All right. Anything else from anyone? And Dr. Renner, I really appreciate the way that you lumped these together. I want to thank you for that. These changes made in these one reading, these are all entirely because of a legal requirement to make a change. That's really it, or a typographical correction. There's really not anything else that we would do. We don't, everything else would require two readings.
And we didn't make any other changes other than those required changes. That's the other thing that Karen keeps us focused on, is making sure we stay true to the policy as it is, unless there would be a reason to make other changes, and then they would come back and we would discuss.
Correct. Absolutely. Wonderful. All right. All those in favor of approving item five, which is all the first reading and only reading policy revisions. All those in favor, please. That's 7-0. Moving on to item six, that is the School Board of Trustees meeting calendar. So we brought this up for discussion last month and kind of gathered information about it. We have a beginning of our August meeting. We'll be scheduling those the second Monday of every month, and those will start at 6:30. And then work sessions, if necessary, as I understand it, will be the very next week, the third Monday of the month, as they have been. Is that correct? Third Wednesday. Okay, thank you. I don't have it in front of me. I should open it up. Also, just please take note that we had to make one exception to that in the month of March because of spring break. That month only in March, the school board meeting will be the first Monday of the month. We didn't have a choice because of the holiday. We wanted to get a good gap between our meetings. So just that one month only, and every other one will be the same. And that again would be posted, if approved tonight, on the website this week. All right. So I need a motion, please.
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Marley. Second by Mr. Karpik. Any comments, questions, discussion on that? Dr. Yin?
Appreciate this change, since the community has been asking for it, so people can go to both this meeting and the city meeting. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. Any other questions, comments? All right, hearing none, all those in favor, please, of our School Board of Trustees meeting calendar for 22-23 by show of hands. At 7-0, Mrs. Julian. All right, moving on to title grants reauthorization, and Mr. Olhout.
So each year prior to the school year, per federal law, our participation in federal title grants 1-5. So although it says on the agenda this is info, it's actually a motion. So we ask for your approval of a motion to continue our participation in the federal title grants.
So can I get a motion, please? Moved by Mr. Karpik.
Second.
Second by Mr. Schott. Questions for Mr. Olha? Okay, hearing none, all those in favor, please, of approving title grants reauthorization, please indicate. That's 7-0, Mrs. Julian. Moving on to item 7, food service report and recommended pricing update. Mrs. Fitzsimmons, our food service director, and also a change. This is also an item for motion, not information tonight.
Can you guys see that?
We have it on our screen, too. If we need to, it is in your box.
Okay. Thank you, Mrs. Witt. So I want to take a few moments this evening to propose the meal prices for the 2022-23 school year and explain a little bit of background about how I arrived at these numbers. So as you may or may not know, West Lafayette Community Schools participates in the National School Lunch Program, which is a federally funded program in which meal payments are received from two sources. The first source is what students pay for a meal. The second source is what the USDA reimburses the food service department for the number of students that eat based on their free, reduced, or paid status. So this table up here shows the total amount of money received for each meal, this is per meal, in 2019-2020, which was pre-pandemic. So in red, it shows the students' cost for these meals. And as you can see, students approved at the free status don't pay anything. Reduced prices are set by the USDA, which is 30 cents for breakfast, 40 cents for lunch. And then at West Lafayette, what we were charging was $2.10 for breakfast, $2.65 for lunch at the elementary, $2.85 for lunch at the intermediate, and $2.95 at the junior senior high school for lunch. So in the next portion, that is the reimbursement rates that we were getting from the USDA by eligibility status. So you can see then highlighted is the total that we received per meal. So that's the two parts and then the total per meal that we received. One thing that I'd like to note is that we actually receive a little bit less per meal at the paid status eligibility than we do for the free and reduced. This is common in why school corporations with a low free and reduced rate, such as ours, tend to have less money financially in the food service department than the higher free and reduced corporations. So in a typical year, USDA will release a paid lunch equity tool. This is called PLE, to help set the paid meal prices. This calculator shows the minimum amount you need to increase to make the paid prices closer to that free and reduced price. Okay. So to make those match a little bit more, we usually do this PLE tool. However, this year, the USDA has not released any guidance on a PLE tool for the upcoming school year. Normally, it's about a 10 cents requirement to increase prices. Okay, so COVID. At the beginning of the 2020-2021 school year, the USDA quickly learned that the food service departments were struggling financially due to decreased students on site, which then decreased our participation in the school lunch programs. So they responded by creating waivers that allowed all students to eat free despite eligibility status. And these, as you can see up here, the $2.60 for breakfast and the $2.56 for lunch are significantly higher reimbursement rates than what we've had in the past. As a side note, this is how we were able to provide our summer meal programs, which we otherwise would not have qualified for. These waivers were very helpful, and we saw our participation increase across the board. As a department, we flourished despite the labor crisis and supply chain issues. Unfortunately, after 2 years of free meals for all students, the waivers expired. So as a corporation, we now need to figure out how much to charge a population of students who are not used to paying for meals. So in true USDA fashion, they have yet to release the 2022-23 reimbursement rates. I've heard that they might be coming out at the end of the month, but since we need this information quickly so families can know, I decided to create this table based on the 21-22 reimbursement rates if we had not elected to be free, which some corporations did do. So That being said, these reimbursements are likely to change. And this is kind of, this table represents kind of the worst case scenario. So free and reduced eligibility prices are already set. So then that would be and so that's $235 total per meal and $373 per lunch compared to the $260 and the $456 that we had the year prior. If you look at the paid eligibility row, this is where I put my proposal for the 22-23 meal prices. And I am suggesting for breakfast, $225 at each school, $3 at the elementary and the intermediate, and then $325 at the high school. And then the column all the way to the right, this is going to show the difference per meal that we received with these proposes, what it'll be different from this upcoming year as it was to last year. And you can see that in some of these, it's pretty significant. With a 15-cent or 7% increase in breakfast prices, we will still lose 3 cents per meal, which ends up being about a 1% decrease for lunch or for breakfast. As for lunch, an increase of 25 cents at the elementary, or about 8% increase, and a 15 cents at the intermediate, or about 5% increase, we could potentially still lose up to $1.14 per meal, which is 25% of what we received last year. Proposing an additional 30 cents or 9% increase at the junior senior high school would leave us with a 20% loss per meal, at about 89 cents. So as you can see, next year is going to be quite a challenge, especially as our labor costs have increased by 25% and our food costs have increased by 30%. I'd like to point out that the food service department is also a fully self-sufficient department, which means everything is paid for with the money made from the sale of our meals and a la carte. Our funds are not supplemented by the corporation, and ideally, we would stay that way. We'll be monitoring our fund balance closely and looking for any negative trends that might appear, and we'll make necessary changes as needed. So I do want to leave on some positive things. Again, this is worst case scenario. So I'm hopeful that when they release the reimbursement rates for next year, that they will increase more, a little bit significantly. Also, the IDOE just released that they are providing supply chain assistance funds to all national school lunch programs to be used for the 2022-23 school year. And West Lafayette will be receiving $48,000, which will be spent on milk, fresh fruit, and vegetables. The food service department has about 4.5 months operating costs and its fund balance, which is over the IDOE and State Board of Accounts 3-month requirement. And I just completed my fourth year as food service director, and I can honestly say that the food service department team is the strongest it's ever been. The staff is the best of the best, and they continue to grow stronger as they gain more experience. I'm extremely proud of our team and the work that we do to continue to strive for high quality meals for students. So with that, I would like a motion to propose these meal prices, and I'll stay up here for questions.
Okay. I know we'll have questions. We'll take a motion first, please. Moved by Mrs. Austin.
Second.
Second by Dr. Springer. Okay. What questions would we like Ms. Fitzsimmons to answer for us?
How do the a la carte options that the kids have the option to buy at the high school and less so at the intermediate school affect your budget?
Yeah, that's a great question. So as I mentioned earlier, our lower free and reduced is actually kind of hurts us a little bit financially. And so we really count on a la carte as a way to help bring in a little bit more income with something that doesn't take a whole lot of labor to do. And something that a lot of people don't know about our a la carte is they go through, there's specific guidelines that they have to meet. They are whole grain. They have to be a certain amount or below a certain amount of sugar and sodium and things like that. So, very good question.
Dr. Yin, did you have a question?
I think from last time you presented the food related issues, and I understand that our school district is relatively small, and the scale make a difference, and plus we have probably lower and free lunch, a reduced price lunch percentage compared with the neighboring schools. So with all these differences, I wonder how is our food prices kind of compared with the neighboring districts? Yeah. For those for the student who need to pay.
Yes, for sure. So I did reach out to some of the local school corporations. Tippecanoe School Corporation, she has about 35% free and reduced. We're around 20%. So a little bit higher than us. She will be charging $2.50 next year. Lafayette Christian School, they're the closest to us free and reduced wise. They are 20% as well. She previously was charging $3.40, so they are a little higher than us. And they're debating whether or not they'll go to $3.50. They haven't completely made that decision. Lafayette School Corporation, they are 85% free and reduced, so it's a very different, just a very different dynamic than ours. And so they are actually doing something that's called community eligibility. They're looking into that, where everyone would be free all the time. We, being such a low free and reduced rate, would not qualify for something like that. I do have a few other ones that I've looked at similar to us. Brownsburg Schools, they are charging $3.15. And they're also at, I don't have their percentage. Silver Creek School Corporation, they're also at $3.15. They have 30% free and reduced. Eastern Hancock is at 30% free and reduced, and they are also at $3.15. So it is challenging because we are one of the highest around here, but we also do have a lower free and reduced rate, which is why it's so important to keep that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, my question was, I know that we've had a large amount of participation, and clearly you've built staffing and resources around that. I'm assuming you have a plan if our participation drops substantially.
Yes. So I do actually have some numbers on participation. I'll use the high school as an example because it's pretty similar across the board. Pre-COVID, we had about 500 students a day that were eating lunch, and about 50 a day for breakfast. These last 2 years, we've had 700 students eat, so it's increased quite a bit for lunch, and 200 for breakfast, which has been our highest. We're anticipating that we'll probably land around 600 for lunch and 100 to 150 per day for breakfast. What we'll do is, it's going to kind of be a wait and see thing, where we have to see how many we need to feed, where everything falls into place. If we needed to, through attrition, we would look at potentially losing some positions if we didn't have the financial ability to keep them.
Thank you.
Yeah, welcome.
Mr. Carpick, did you have a question?
Just a couple comments. One, first, I appreciate your general attitude towards, especially during COVID, and the thankless work that you guys have done to take care of our community, not only our school community, our community. I think that sets the right example of what West Lafayette needs to be about. I think also with respect to the budget, it reminds me of how we go through our budget dance every year and don't have all the facts. Mm-hmm. And so it's very difficult to do that. I feel for Steve and you on that front. And I think the philosophy of we got to make this work somehow is the only way through it. But we have, it's hard to know in this world, new world, at least the last 40 years of kind of runaway of inflation, you have a big challenge. But thank you for your effort, and I appreciate the explaining that well to what it's all about.
Any other questions or comments for Mrs. Fitzsimmons? Okay, hearing none, all those in favor of the new recommended pricing for food for lunches, raise your hand, please. Okay, thank you. That motion carries. That's 7-0, Mrs. Julian. Moving on to item 8, Happy Hollow lease agreements. Mr. Olhout.
There is, as the board is aware, we have several tenants who lease space and usage of the Happy Hollow building that we're in. Some of these leases are due to be renewed at this time, and also some have some changes in terms that the groups have proposed. So I have three such changes. The first is with GLASS, Greater Lafayette Area Special Services. They have been using some classroom and other space in the building for one of their programs, and they would like to amend their lease, which expires at the end of next school year, to include use of about half of the former office complex in this building as well, and they would also pay an additional amount of rent to cover the additional square footage that they would be using. We also rent some space to the church in Lafayette, and they would like to use this for another year. They will be reducing the amount of usage slightly. They won't have any usage during the week and will only use space on Sundays to include the library room 151 and on occasion the cafeteria with appropriate notice. And their lease will go down proportionate to the decrease in their use. And then finally, the Patents Group, which is a consortium of special education supplies that has used one classroom in this building this year, they would like to actually double and use two classrooms next year, and would their rent would likewise double to compensate us for that. So all of these leases are expiring in 2023. There's nothing that runs any farther than that out into the future. As the board is considering the future of this facility, we haven't committed it to anything beyond about a year from now. So we'd ask your approval of these amendments and extensions to these existing leases.
Okay, we'll start with getting this on the table. So can I get a motion, please?
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Schott.
Second.
Second by Mrs. Austin. Who has any questions? I've got one, Mr. Hall. Are they all of these leases? I didn't notice any mention of air conditioning being a requirement. So
all the leases, these are amendments, so that the lease that stands behind this has more terms than just the amendment, and they're all as is. And every tenant has been communicated with on an individual basis about that fact, including the status of the children.
Wonderful. Thank you. Just check in. Anybody else? Any questions? Okay. All those in favor of approving these Happy Hollow building lease amendments, please indicate with a hand raise. That motion carries. It's 7-0, Mrs. Julian. Moving on to item 9, Reuter Consulting Services and Dr. Greiner.
This is simply the retainer agreement that we would have in place if the board would approve to continue consulting services beginning in July. And so it's my recommendation that the board vote to approve that, which has been presented to you in Friday notes as well as in previous board meetings.
Can I get a motion, please?
So moved.
First by Dr. Springer, second by Mr. Karpik. Any questions for Dr. Greiner? Dr. Yin?
We're answering my questions earlier.
My pleasure.
Okay. All those in favor, show of hands, please. That motion carries. It's 7-0, Mrs. Julian. All right, we're going to move on to item 10, the West Lafayette Community School Corporation and TSC Bus Maintenance Agreement, and Mr. Olhout.
So as you're aware, West Lafayette Community Schools does not have a bus maintenance facility. And so we have contracted those services with the Tippecanoe School Corporation for a number of years. And typically this has been on a biennial contract, and it is up for renewal at this time. So the terms of the agreement remain the same as the last agreement that we had with TSC, which is that we pay them a flat fee per year, per bus, to have access to their facility, which would be our overhead if we had to construct our own facility and maintain it. And then we are charged as needed for whatever maintenance or repairs, I really shouldn't say repairs, a certain amount of maintenance is included, but the repairs that the buses need. And TSC also provides us with parking for the buses in their facility, access to their fuel islands, and any number of other things that we don't have access to here in the city. So with that, I would ask the approval of the school board to renew our agreement with Tippecanoe School Corporation on these same terms.
Can I get a motion, please? So moved by Mrs. Austin.
Second.
Second by Mr. Marley. And questions, comments for Mr. Olhout? Dr. Yin, go ahead. Yes.
So when we talk about maintenance, does that cover the, if let's say if a bus is broken and need a lot of repairment, will we pay extra, or this will cover any repairment?
No, this, the fee that is mentioned in the agreement is essentially the access to their facility and all of the overhead that we would incur if we were to construct our own facility would be before you would have any repairs done. So we also get billed if a bus needs to go in and have extensive repairs or even minor repairs done, we're billed for their labor and parts in addition to this.
Oh, okay. And so, yeah, I emailed you and Sean and Rachel earlier about the price. I wonder, like, how is the price calculated in the current price, right?
So this price, yep, is just what Tippecanoe School Corporation has set as what they feel is a fair agreement for the wear and tear on their facilities and the access to their parking and just the, I guess you might say, the access to the facility. I guess another way to explain it would be if you wished to open a school, before you would be able to do anything, you would have to have a building, access to an actual facility to teach in. Likewise, in order to do the bus maintenance and repairs, we don't have access to the tools, to the lifts, and all of those things that TSC provides to us for this fee. And so we pay this fee, flat fee per year, and then as repairs occur, they bill us on a monthly basis for those.
In past years too, I recall you commenting that in doing maintenance on our buses that we've been saved quite a lot by TSC mechanics who have noticed this or that issue is coming up, and we should be alert to that. So I feel because they know our buses, it seems to me in the past we've had good advice from them on our buses. Do you think that's true statement? Am I thinking, I mean, that's my memory, so.
I think that's true. I also know that our transportation director, Mr. Caldwell, has been, he does what he can to help with the minor maintenance on our buses so that we're not taking them over to TSC for little things that he can handle himself.
I was saying, he's very conscientious. We'll change a light bulb or whatever he can do to, so he is very right, conscientious
very
of the dollars. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's also, to be clear, it's the savings of the district. We don't have a facility to be able to do.
So, right, if we were to build our own facility, that would be a capital expenditure that we would have to lay out in the multiple millions of dollars.
Right.
And then we would still have to pay our mechanics and buy the parts, et cetera.
And insurance for that is another.
Yes, and then even if you think about it, the long-range preventative maintenance, then you're putting money toward that too. And so in a way that we're renting the space, but we're, and with that rent, one, we have the convenience of places to put our buses, places to repair our buses. And then also we're helping with the preventative maintenance, which is, and as he said, the
correct.
Utilities, so.
Did that answer your question? Do you have any more?
Yeah, kind of. And so do we have any like a reference for this? Because I don't really know the school buses, and just to me, it's kind of 4,000, more than 4,000 per bus. It's sort of high, but plus they don't cover, you know, the extensive repair. And so, yeah, I just wonder whether there's any reference, like say other districts have same needs and how much do they pay? And another thing is, I remember we have several new buses, and then will that give us some better rate per bus from them or something? Right. I don't know. I really am just a kind of ignorant about this issue and try to figure out and whether it's a kind of good price for us.
One thing that I did look into is the rate that TSE charges us for the repairs in terms of the mechanics, and it's the same as what LSC would charge as well. So that part I do know, I have a direct comparison for. In terms of whether there are other schools that lease this service from different school corporations, I couldn't provide you with that today, but I could do some research, find out if there are any comparable situations around.
Yeah, it would be nice to have some reference, and so we know whether this is a sort of fair price we are paying. I noticed some of our buses are parked here in the Happy Hollow parking lot, and some of them park in a football field or something, and so we still have other buses parking there with them?
Yes.
Okay.
We have buses parked. Some are parked in Happy Hollow at some times. Others are at the maintenance, the overall maintenance facility on Cumberland. And then some are parked at Tippecanoe School Corporation's bus garage.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. We've had a really good relationship with TSE over the years. They've been very helpful to us. I mean, I think it's a fair assessment of the work that, I mean, there is some level of trust that we know that we're getting fair pricing, but in terms of that, is that a fair assessment?
Yes, it is.
What they've done, because we've had challenges over the years in working with City Bus and being able to assimilate that all into our total plan.
Correct. I know this has been done in taking many, many factors into consideration.
Okay.
Okay, all those in favor of approving the WL and TSC bus maintenance agreement, by show of hands, please. That would be
abstain.
Okay, that would be 6 and 1 abstention. Dr. Yin. Moving on to item 11, Red Devil Academy credit recovery admentum, and Mr. Olha.
Yes, so as part of credit recovery and keeping our students on track to graduate, we have a program called the Red Devil Academy. And this program enables students who have fallen behind in earning their credits for high school graduation to use a program called Edmentum to recover those credits. We have a Red Devil Academy supervisor who makes sure that the students are on track during their class period that they spend there. The Edmentum program allows students access to a variety of different courses that they may not have been successful with in a traditional classroom, so that they can earn those credits and either graduate straight away or go back into a traditional classroom environment. And so we're asking for your approval today to purchase 24 licenses, that's 24 seats, in Edmentum courses at any given time. For $3,000, that's $125 per license for next academic year.
Okay, we'll start with a motion on that, please.
So moved.
Moved by Dr. Springer.
Second.
Second by Mrs. Austin. I will point out that this is exactly the same agreement that we did this time last year.
Correct.
Is that correct? Okay. Any questions for Mr. Olcott on Inventum? Dr.
Yeah, Yen? Yeah, I wonder, so we had the same thing last year, and do we have record, like, how many students used this last year?
Yes, I have some information for the first semester of this year, as this semester just wrapped up. But in the first semester this year, 122 courses were completed by 24 different students. Of those students, 6 of the 24 graduated. 8 of the 24 were then able to return to traditional classes. 7 of the 24 came back to the Red Devil Academy program, and 3 of the 24 left West Lafayette. Over the last 2 years, 37 students were able to graduate, in part because they had access to the Red Devil Academy and were able to either get on or stay on track to graduation.
Great, thanks.
Any other questions for Mr. Olcott about this? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor of the credit recovery program, Red Devil Academy, please indicate. That is 7-0, Mrs. Julian, that motion passes. Moving on to item 12, the Willis Student Handbook and Code of Conduct. Dr. Greiner.
So this is our elementary handbook, and we are last meeting you had revisions to the intermediate, and so now we have our elementary revisions, and these revisions are mainly related to the change in start time and end time as a result of the transportation schedule changing slightly due to city bus no longer servicing our students at the high school and junior high level. And then there's also revision related to lunch visitation for parents now that we're post-COVID.
Okay, can I get a motion, please? We'll start there.
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Karpik.
Second.
Second by Mr. Marley. Questions for Dr. Greiner?
I have a kind of follow-up question about the it's not in this one, the revision in this one, about the background check. So I saw Dr. Greiner's response to that question. I'm not sure. It's kind of not very clear about what that means for the background check part.
Right. Do you want
to? I would be happy to do that. Okay. I'm going to actually talk about it during my report. So I will just share that right now since you raised the question,
okay,
Dr.
Yen.
You've
thanks.
Given me the perfect opportunity. My pleasure. So there's been questions since I got here during community meetings, talking with principals and talking with board members, even about the challenges to some families regarding volunteering in the schools, given the challenges of a expanded background check. And so policy 3121 states that any volunteer who may have direct ongoing contact with children when performing services for the school must provide the corporation an expanded criminal background check prior to the beginning of volunteering work in the corporation. But it goes a step further and states that the superintendent may develop and periodically update an exception list to permit volunteers without an expanded criminal history check. And so with that one, we would do a, I want to say minimum background check. I lost my word. Limited, thank you, a limited background check. And so what that might be, and we've talked with the principals about it, and so I would want to work very closely with principals and teachers for various reasons on when that might be. So an example, if you've got speaking from a first grade teacher perspective, when I went to the zoo with my students, we were only allowed so many parent volunteers because of bus transport to and from the zoo. And so for that reason, I think that might be possibly a time where I would want to say to the principal, we can't afford to have limited background checks in this situation because I need my volunteers to have the expanded so they can be alone with kids. In some field trip situations, though, it might be where a parent can partner up with another volunteer who has an expanded background check. Because the key here is, under a limited background check, you can't be working alone with students. Under a limited one, under expanded one, you can. So if you were going to have volunteers go on a field trip under a limited background check, they would have to be paired with someone that has an expanded background check. The lunch situation would be a time where parents might want to be involved in a lunch experience. And so a limited background check might very well be appropriate because they won't be in a situation where they're working alone with students. Coming in and reading aloud with students, that a limited background check would be appropriate. So I would work very closely with the principals and then the principals, of course, would work very closely with the teachers. But there are opportunities where or situations where parents will be able to volunteer with a limited background check, allowing more parents to feel like they can be involved in the educational partnership within the schools.
Okay, thanks. I volunteered for schools and I did a background check, but I don't remember about the limited and expanded. So when I did the background check, was that a limited?
So the limited is the new piece that Dr. Greiner is considering. So the policy is written that, as I understand it, that expanded is required unless under the discretion of the superintendent, there are some exceptions. And Dr. Greiner is proposing an exception to allow a limited option for parents.
So what's the limited background check?
I think there are still situations where you're in the schools with limited right now already, right?
Yeah.
Yes. But the
search anyone's background for free. The comprehensive one, though, is more costly for people who've moved around a lot and can be run through a vendor.
Okay. And it's their full adult life for some large number of years. So
if the fee is an issue, I wonder whether, let's say, Parent Council or Education Foundation can provide the fee for those parents who wish to volunteer but cannot afford to get the expanded background check?
So our policy states that that they would pay for that. And actually teachers pay for theirs too. Right. So
yeah, we pay for everyone. All of us have paid for theirs. I think really what I'm reading anyway, and I want to thank you for this, Dr. Greiner, I'm reading it a really strong interest in helping parents be able to come in to the classroom in a safe way. And if they're supervised by an adult who has a completed check, then the idea is that more parents could come in and be welcome. It's particularly problematic and expensive for parents who have moved a lot or don't have US citizenship or here on a limited basis. It can be very difficult and expensive for them to get the expanded background check. That's my understanding of it. Is that your understanding of it?
That's what I heard were the challenges in the community meetings and with board members that were a concern. So the question was, could we go to some sort of tiered volunteering where the limited background check would be applicable and work? And after talking with the principals, rather than necessarily setting tiers, kind of go in situations where a limited could work and accepting that as an opportunity to come in and maybe work with a small group with the teacher present and so forth.
Does that?
Yeah, I just for safety concern, I just feel the background check is important and so
it's legally required by the state of Indiana. So we're just trying to, I think the idea is to expand it a little bit in a very safe, supervised way so parents.
Yes, and not suggesting in any way compromising safety. And so that's why it would be a limited background check, which will catch most things. The limited background check, again, would and parents can come in like for lunch now for a limited background check. So if they were going to go, it might be where if a parent, for example, that couldn't get that expanded check because maybe their from another country and have or have moved around a lot, as Mrs. Witt has suggested. It might be where a parent in a situation where there was room for that parent to attend could attend and partner with a limited background check, not without a background check, with a limited background check, partner with someone that had an expanded check.
Yeah, also I really wish probably the Parent Council or Education Foundation can provide some funds for those parents who cannot afford the 10-day background check to do it. Yeah. I think it's less than $100.
I think the difficulty for many of our parents, this is just parent feedback that I've heard, is that not every parent wants to go and ask for money and say they can't afford to do something. So that's a difficult request, particularly for some of our families who are new to the community and would need to go through that process. So I agree, it would be wonderful if scholarship were available, but I just think that sometimes we don't know about those families. When they have that need, that's not an easy ask to make sometimes. And those are probably exactly the parents and the families that we want to come into our schools and be a part of the culture and the community. So, but I agree with you. It'd be wonderful if scholarships were available, if they were needed. That's a great idea.
Might be something to discuss at the community council meeting in the fall.
Yeah, that would be great to provide that resource. Thanks.
Thanks.
Okay, are there any other questions for Dr. Greiner on the handbook or this issue? I were kind of off topic a little bit. Okay. All those in favor of approving the Will S. Student Handbook and Code of Conduct, please indicate with a hand. That motion carries, 7-0, Mrs. Julian. Moving on to the book donation, Asian American and Pacific Island Heritage Month, Dr. Greiner.
This is information only. We have accepted books. We got we were contacted by One Book, One World, West Lafayette Group. In celebration of Asian American and Pacific Island heritage, a book donation, donating several books to our elementary library, intermediate library, and junior high school library, 12 books at the elementary and 12 books at the intermediate, and 8 books at the high school. And so we've accepted those books. I'd like to personally say thank you to the One Book, One World, West Lafayette Group. And we look forward to continued partnership.
Thank you. There's no vote on this one. Any questions for Dr. Greiner? It's below probably the amount, the threshold.
Yeah, I don't think we need to vote to approve. I think okay. This one, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's, yeah. All right, we'll move on to item 14, field trips. Dr. Greiner.
Let's see. So we have several field trips. We have 7 field trips that are out of state or overnight. They're related to athletics. You saw them on the list, debate, robotics, and dance. And so I would like to recommend to the board that you approve these trips as presented.
Okay, can I get a motion, please? Moved by Mr. Marley. Second by Mrs. Alston. Any questions or comments regarding field trips? Okay, all those in favor, please indicate by raising your hand. That motion carries 7-0, Mrs. Julian. Item 15, personnel report, Dr. Greiner.
It is my recommendation that the board vote to approve the personnel report as presented to you.
Can I get a motion, please?
So moved.
Moved by Dr. Springer.
Second.
Second by Mr. Schott. Comments, questions? Okay, hearing none, by show of hands, please. All those in favor of approving the personnel report, that carries 7-0, Mrs. Julian. And item 16, accounts payable, Mr. Olha.
We have accounts payable this month in the total of $3,259,856.26, of which $1,064,911.49 is payroll. Payroll deductions of $472,879.45, claims of $1,585,477. WEVEC claims of $55,218.21, and construction claims of $81,446.34. So we'd ask your approval of the claims.
Okay, can I get a motion, please? Moved by Mrs. Austin. Second by Mr. Marley. Any questions for Mr. Olhow on our accounts payable this month?
I asked a question about the legal service, and thank you, Dr. Greiner, for replying me and providing more information. And I still feel the amount for deal with public access is huge, and so I just wonder whether we can do anything to reduce that in the future, so we don't need to pay for that big amount of money to deal with the public access request, something.
I think we can, but it would depend on what it is that is being requested. So there's some things that are so sensitive that we have to make sure. Like, I think there weren't there requests at one point related to the actual legal fees, and I think that's where we had to then sit down and make sure that we were protecting names and so forth. And so that's where I think the higher expense came. So hopefully this will, as we continue to be transparent in this approach, maybe some of that will die down, and we'll see legal expenses related to that diminish.
That is definitely the hope, I think, in part of the work that we've been doing to increase transparency, increase different documents, and do those things. So they require redaction, and redaction takes time. So and legal review in some cases, and it's just we're trying, but the changes that we're making are directly steered towards that issue and improving transparency, and the hope is that will reduce some of these requests. We don't obviously have control over who asks for what, and sometimes what we're asked for is we might not understand the purpose of it immediately, but we still are legally obliged to respond to it. So
the redaction was done by the attorney, for example, the invoice and shared by some community members has reductions in the file. So
there were times where Mrs. Julian sat and worked back and forth with the attorney to make sure that she understood what should or shouldn't be in there, and make sure that there was no link to a name where someone should be protected, so that it wasn't specified. So yes, there are examples of where that has occurred.
Okay, so that part is time consuming, right?
Yeah.
Okay, because
but for example, so like in my weekly notes that I put out, I personally sit and redact those. But in order for me to do that well, I had to ask legal counsel to give me direction on what I could and couldn't and should and shouldn't. And so there's an initial bubble of training or learning that needs to happen. And then on an ongoing basis, I just do it. It's my Monday morning cup of coffee.
Now you have heard on that. So
that's
good. That saves money.
Yeah. So I'm not skilled at that. So I had to be trained upon it. I don't know, it's a very good cup of coffee, Dr. Yin. are there any other questions about the accounts payable that we could ask? Anybody have anything? Okay, hearing none, all those in favor of doing the accounts payable, please indicate by hand raise. That carries 7-0, Mrs. Julian. All right, we'll move on to information to the board. I want to give just a few updates. One of those is, we've been working on the processing the RFP for legal services. Dr. Yin and Mr. Marley and Dr. Greiner and I have met. We're continuing to work through that process. We are still on track to bring that to some kind of vote in August. And if you have any questions, individual board members, about that, please do let me know. I also would like to congratulate Mrs. Austin. She has been selected by the Indiana School Board Association for a 2-year term as a legislative liaison for Region 4.
This is a big honor, and it's something that she's very well suited for. And I appreciate her agreement to serve in that role. We haven't had anybody fill that role, and the ISBA will be better for you, Mrs. Austin. I also would like to note that three board members, if I can do math correctly, one, two, there are three of us, four of us, thank you, with new email addresses in the past month. And so just to make note of those would be changed on the corporation website. They have been changed on the corporation website. And if anyone does email us to the incorrect email, we'll be using those exclusively. And so we will forward those messages and proceed. That would be Dr. Yin, Mrs. Austin, myself, and Mr. Marley. So please look for changed addresses for us. And then finally, I'm excited to announce that the date and time for the ISBA prospective board member training has been set for Monday, July the 11th. Registration from 6 to 6:30. And then the training will go from 6:30 to 8. That will be led by Steve Horton and Lisa Tanzel with the ISBA. There is a fee attached to it. The link will be up on the website tomorrow. We are just hosting it here at the Junior Senior and the Media Center. I'm very pleased to have this opportunity in our community for anyone who's considering a run for the school board, or anyone who just wants to understand a little bit better what the role of a school board is in a community. This is a wonderful opportunity to take advantage of right in our back door. And then finally, we'll move on to board and superintendent reports. Dr. Greiner, would you like to kick us off?
Sure. So I'd just like to give an update on the elementary principal search. And I'd like to say, since this is Dr. Taggart's last meeting with us, thank you for your service, and we will miss you. Of course.
I just want to say thank you for welcoming me to the district. It has been an amazing 4 years. I love this community. I am blessed to work with amazing people that have taught me a lot, and I look forward to taking that and moving forward and being able to benefit other families. So I do really, really appreciate all that you have done and entrusted me.
And Dr. Taggart has communicated to the team that it's bittersweet for her. She's actually moving closer to home, so she's very excited about that and some new, very neat opportunities in the area of early child care, preschool. So it's something else she's very passionate about. So you'll be greatly missed, but we know you're going to do great things moving forward. You're welcome. So we've posted the position as of May 26th, and we're in the process of collecting staff and family feedback through an open-ended survey. That open-ended survey closes, though, tonight or tomorrow. I'll go ahead and close it tomorrow morning. And so I've been in there. There's been a lot of activity in there, and so we're getting lots of good feedback that the interview committee will use to make a decision while involving the entire community that chose to speak to what they would be looking for in that position. When the survey closes, the window closes June 10th, and then first round interviews will be June 17th. On the committee will be teachers, and I'm working with the building level leadership, WLEA, to help me find teachers that are interested and well representative. Parents, board member, a board member, and building administrators, and central office administrators.
And I would like to thank Mr. Marley for serving in that capacity on behalf of the board and the search committee.
Thank you.
Anything else from you, Ms. Dr. Reiner?
That's all.
That's your list.
Yeah, I did the background check.
All right. So we'll go around. Mr. Karpik, do you have anything to report?
No, I did not attend the foundation meeting, so I don't report on that.
All right.
Thank you.
Mr. Marley?
I was going to say,
go ahead.
That is that we're foundation meeting this week, and also the alumni will be participating in that on Wednesday.
Wonderful.
For the next group of Wall of Pride, et cetera, so other activities that they'll be working on.
Wonderful. Thank you. Mr. Marlin?
Nothing to report yet on negotiations. We're going to get that fired up here pretty soon. So more to come. Tell you a little bit about Redevelopment Commission. So we probably closed Jaeger Road today from Cumberland to Sagamore Parkway. So if you want to get from north of Sagamore Parkway to Purdue, might fly. Maybe
it's true.
Maybe a transporter, something like that, like on Star Trek. At any rate, I'm making a little joke there. But the other thing that you may have read in the paper is that Salisbury from Cumberland to Sagamore Parkway. So right there, close to Cumberland, it's 18 inches too narrow. So if you have trouble getting through there, there's a reason. Needs to be widened. Somebody made a mistake. There's some finger pointing going on. The bond insurance companies are kind of debating on it right now. Point is, if we wait on the courts, Salisbury may not get fixed, and school buses can't get through, and emergency vehicles, nobody's happy. So we're going to keep building the street, or rebuilding, I should say. And part of the problem is, if you've noticed, there hasn't been a lot of action. It's because we have to do some utility locates or relocates. And the utility companies, I just talked to the Duke official today, those guys are swamped because everybody's doing stuff. There's a bunch of stuff going on the west side of Purdue, out towards SOP. So, I mean, these guys have more work than they can handle. So that's, if you think there's delays, that's because there are. So stay tuned, drive careful.
And did I read correctly that the grant construction in front of the junior senior has been postponed a year?
Yeah, something like that. That's right.
Yes.
Just take some Advil.
All right, Mr. Schott.
Foundation, couple of updates. Wendy Ayler's office will move out of the central office over to the new, or to the junior senior high school next week. That's to make room for Anna Roth, our new assistant superintendent, so she can be keeping tabs on Dr. Greiner. Wendy's office will be on the main floor, just inside the main office, or near the main office, by the Williamson Family Library. So you can find Wendy in her new office starting next week. Foundation has 6 alumni reunions scheduled at this point for this year, beginning in July and running through October. Reminder, the all-alumni tailgate is Friday, September 9th, prior to the homecoming football game. And between Wendy and Brad Cohen, they're always willing to help out with any alumni groups that want to come back, any classes that want to come back and see the campus. Lastly, from Foundation, last Saturday, Westside Tractor employees worked together. They packed and donated school supplies for Willis. This was their idea. One of the Foundation board members, Bill Price, pulled this off. They were doing a retreat and wanted to have a community service element to it and took it upon themselves to help out and just a great show of support by the Westside Tractor employees. Then one other comment, between graduation and several graduation parties I was able to attend, there was a lot of appreciation for what has gone on the last 3 years, and none of that should go to the board, but I just want to acknowledge the administration, current and previous, the principals. You guys, I mean, you talk about seniors this year, had basically 3 years of dealing with the most bizarre circumstance imaginable, and we pulled it off as beautifully as could be expected. So I'm passing on the praise I got from multiple parents and families to you for a job well done.
Dr. Springer?
So for Park Board, the outdoor municipal pool is now open for open swim, lap swimming, swim lessons. Both the Wellness Center and the Lilly Nature Center are offering weekly summer camps for kids. And the Wellness Center is also offering swim lessons and other activities for kids. Just check the Parks and Rec website for more information. At our May board teacher discussion, we talked about reconvening the teacher evaluation committee to analyze the implementation of the 1920 new evaluation document that was derailed by COVID. But the new document with changes was implemented this year. So the committee will come together sometime this summer. Our tweaks needed for 2022 to 23. The teachers were very grateful and appreciative for the new health clinic. They were thanking us tremendously for having that option available to them starting this September. We also discussed insurance feedback, the 2022-23 changes to the building schedules and the transportation changes, and then COVID trend data at that point. Policy Committee will continue meeting this summer. Thanks to everything that was passed today, that pretty much wraps up the October 2021 updates needed by new state and federal laws, and we will begin working on the May 2022 updates. So, and just want to reiterate, you know, we do these first reading of policies. Well, any West Lafayette Community School Corporation stakeholders can suggest changes to policy at any time by emailing Mrs. Julian at central office, and she will make sure those comments get to the policy committee.
It's a great reminder. Thank you. Mrs. Austin.
The Public School Foundation of Tippecanoe County is meeting next week on the 14th, and I'm really thrilled to be working with the ISBA on the legislative stuff. I think that's going to be very interesting, and I've already got a great relationship with our local reps, which I think will do good things for the kids, which is what it's all about. So that's all I got.
Thank you. Dr. Yin?
I don't serve any active committees, and except for the legal service search, and you know, so you had the update. And but I do want to make several comments. And first is I just the earlier Dr. Greiner talked about the donation, the donation of books from the Asian community. I would like to express my appreciation to them for. And like they organize and donate those books, and I believe those books will enrich the student, our students' education, and help them understand, better understand and appreciate the diversity that our community country has. And so in addition, I wonder if, because our community has many other ethnicity groups, if any other ones wants to do something similar, should they just contact you or the central office to do so? Yeah, because I feel, you know, all the groups have their history, culture, wisdom, and it would be nice to share. And
three more. Thank you.
So yeah. So another thing is for the principal search, and it's great that you did a survey among teachers and the community, and I wonder whether the board members will be able to access that information. So later when I think Rachel said we will have a meeting to
point
to learn about the finalist, and so if we can have the information from
I would be happy to do that.
The community and the teachers, mm-hmm. so we know people's priority, and this, to help us evaluate yes. the finalist, that would be great.
Good. I will do that. I will summarize that and look for kind of trends to make it easy to follow and get that in like in Friday notes.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay, we'll move on to communication from the audience. We have one person signed up, Aaron Moonwalker.
My name is Aaron Moonwalker. I live at 1147 Hillcrest Road in West Lafayette. I wanted to talk to you tonight about, I'm not sure if you saw this or not from the meeting minutes, excuse me, or meeting notes I saw. I wasn't sure if this was addressed by the board or viewed by the board, but this is the list of the Red Devil principals, the core values, Principal Schreiner and some staff members put together for the junior senior high school. It includes things like minimize absences, sleep at home, put your phone away, finish what you start. As a therapist serving this community, I want to emphasize that values are a driving force in mental health. This list of principles or values really struck a chord with me, and I had to run it by other mental health providers and former educators just to make sure I wasn't alone in feeling that way about this list. The consensus was that it sounded less like guiding principles and more like a list of grievances, and I don't think that's what admin had in mind. It sounds criticizing and antiquated. I really don't think that you would think that these are the most important values and principles. I don't think staff would want to be spoken to by the board or by admin in the same manner. We're by the same campus where Roxane Gay used to write, where Nobel Prize winners have taught, the same campus that helped send Neil Armstrong to the moon. But this list of values is not a list that inspires greatness. It's a lecture. I mean, nothing says shoot for the moon like telling someone to put their phone away. Furthermore, this was written looking at the signs and symptoms of students' struggles, not the actual barriers that they face. Values and principles should be written so that they can be applied across contexts and to all students, and we can test that out together now. The student getting bullied, do they need to know to minimize their absences? Or how about the student whose parents just got divorced? The student who just got sexually assaulted by a peer, do they need to be told to speak with integrity? The student who just experienced a microaggression from a staff member, should they be reminded to keep an open mind? How about the student who has learning disabilities, who really needs to hear from you that it's okay to learn differently? I'm not sure why that one got left out. Or the student who is being pressured to perform by their parents or by their teachers and needs to know that it's okay to make mistakes. How about the students fearing they'll be shot to death in their classroom? Are these the words we want the media pouring over long after gunshots ring out? Would this list reflect the true heart of the school that would break in that event? I know staff and admin had the best intentions, but this list makes it sound as though staff and admin value compliance more than they value compassion. What if we did something really courageous and open-hearted and reminded the students in this list that we loved them, that so much of what we do is for them, that we aren't perfect and we don't expect them to be perfect either? And if that is too liberal or too hippy-dippy, then please just look to science, or specifically educational neuroscience and psychology. Feeling safe, appreciated, and worthy is what opens students' minds and allows students to be present, not being commanded to be a good citizen or to sleep at home. At the very least, please encourage them to remove sleep at home, because by consensus, that was the most offensive in this list. We can do so much better. We owe it to our students to express more love, imagination, safety, and inspiration through this list. And I am more than happy to help if you're willing to guide the administration to open themselves up to outside input and take another look. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Moonwalker, for your insight. Okay, so we'll move on to future meetings. As a reminder, there is no July meeting scheduled. Our next regular board meeting will be Monday, August the 8th at 6:30 here in this room. I don't have any upcoming days of interest that I haven't already told you about. Information for the public is
just to let you know that board documents and audio from this meeting will be posted on the WLCSC website within 7 to 10 days following the board meeting. And with that, we will take a motion for adjournment.
Can I get a motion, please?
Second.
By Mr. Karpik.
Second.
Second by Mr. Marley. All those in favor, please, by show of hands, to adjourn the meeting.
That would be 7-0, Mrs. Julian. That motion passes.